练习三。
Part A. You will hear a talk given by a fire officer. As you listen, answer questions 1 to 10 by circling true or false. You will hear the talk only once. You now have 60 seconds to read questions 1 to 10.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to begin by quoting a few figures at you. 55,887, 8,500, and 1,000 degrees centigrade. That is the number of house fires reported last year. The number of people killed or injured in those fires, and the temperature of the flames given off by some items of furniture within 30 seconds of a fire starting. All rather alarming, I think you'd agree. Well, what can we do to prevent these tragedies? In the Fire Prevention Service, we have three golden rules which we call awareness, precautions, and escape. I'd like to start by dealing with the first of these, awareness. In the average home, there are about half a dozen fire hazards or risk factors which we should all be aware of. Now, the primary hazard is the electrical circuit. A lot of us live in older houses, and if your wiring is more than 15 years old, it may not be up to modern safety standards. Check that you have a functioning fuse box, and if you're in any doubt, you really ought to get it looked at by a qualified electrician. Electrical appliances come second on my list. And I'm thinking in particular of televisions and electric blankets. Some of you may not know that a color television can generate over 20,000 volts, and this voltage can be retained for quite some time after a set has been switched off. So always switch off and disconnect from the mains when you finish watching. And don't put a TV in front of curtains or soft furnishings. The electric blanket is no longer the danger it was years ago, but it was the cause of 14 fatalities last year. So I think it is still important to remember not to fold them, and certainly not to use one if it accidentally gets wet. I just mentioned soft furnishings, and this is a hazard which I want to emphasize. Many of you may have sofas and armchairs made before 1989, when the new fire safety regulations came in. Now these may contain polyurethane foam fillings. You probably know that these fillings can give off extremely poisonous fumes in a fire. So if you do have this kind of furniture, you should either get rid of it or have it recovered with flame retardant cloth, which is now widely available and not expensive. Okay, I'd like to say a few words now about open fires. Recently, we've noticed quite a fashion to return to open fires, especially in older houses. Obviously, this is quite a hazard, and there are one or two fairly obvious things to be aware of. First, you should always use a fire guard in front of the fireplace. And make sure it's a fairly sturdy one. Secondly, never dry wet clothes in front of the fire. To be honest, if you have young children, I think you're better off bricking the fire up and investing in central heating. It might not be so romantic on a winter evening, but it's certainly a lot safer. The final thing I want to draw your attention to is aerosols and bottles. Aerosols and bottles often contain flammable liquid or gas, so these should never be left in direct sunlight, on a window ledge, for example. You'd be surprised at how quickly sunlight can heat up a pressurized container and lead to a fire. So keep them in a cupboard or away from windows. Right, I'd like to go on now to the area of precautions. Smoke detectors are perhaps the most common. You now have 20 seconds to check your answers to questions 1 to 10. This is the end of Part A. Part B. You will hear several conversations or talks, and you must answer the questions by choosing A, B, C, or D. You will hear the recording only once. Questions 11 to 13 are based on the following dialogue. You now have 15 seconds to read questions 11 to 13. Did you see the television series with Michael Palin?
The one where he went around the world in 80 days?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good. You know, that's something I've always wanted to do.
Me too. Mind you, you have to put up with a lot of hassles. I mean, I went to Hong Kong last year, and it was one long disaster.
Really?
Yeah, I was stuck in Moscow for 3 days.
How on earth did that happen?
Well, it was like one of those bucket shop tickets, you know, from the back of a magazine. I went down to this little place in central London, in Soho, and paid cash.
But they're usually okay, aren't they?
That's what I thought at the time. Now I know better. I mean, the plane was delayed 2 hours leaving Heathrow, and we were doing a stopover at Moscow. It was Aeroflot. Like mega crummy, no drinks, terrible service. So we arrived late at Moscow in the middle of the night. And we all went into the transit lounge, and after about 2 hours, this official came in and told us we'd missed the connection to Hong Kong. We'd have to stay the night in the airport hotel.
But why?
The late departure from Heathrow, apparently.
So, what was the hotel like?
Grim. More like a prison, really. Anyway, the next morning, I went down to reception and asked what was happening. Disaster. They'd checked my ticket or something and decided it wasn't a proper Aeroflot one. Only valid for the twice-a-week flight, not the daily flight. So I had to sit there and watch all the other passengers go off to catch the next plane to Hong Kong while I was stuck in this terrible hotel.
Well, a good chance to explore Moscow.
No way. I didn't have a Russian visa, of course. So they wouldn't let me out. I had to stay there for 3 days. The pits. No TV, no newspapers, no phone lines, and the food was gross. All because I had this cheap ticket.
I guess you won't be buying cheap tickets again.
You're not wrong.
You now have 30 seconds to check your answers to questions 11 to 13.